Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 19. There's not much going on in Blue Jays land, but the folks at Jays Journal are starting to roll out their top 30 prospect list. We're going to talk to Jays Journal writers Charlie Caskey and Michael Ray for our Prospect Podcast. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. The Blue Jays From Away podcast returns. Welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This is our special prospect edition with a lot of writers starting to release their top X number of prospects. Us at Jays Journal, we've been getting ready our top 30 prospect lists, and I'm being joined by one of the co-editors at Jays Journal, Michael Ray, and one of the other prospect gurus, Charlie Caskey. Charlie's taking over the role of coordinating that top 30 list, and Michael's going to be doing some contributing to the list as well, so welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So that first voice you heard was Michael Ray. So we're going to ask Michael our first question. How did you see this this version of the top 30 prospects going down? Were there any surprises? Do you have any dark horses? Did you have any guys that you really liked on that list?
I think one of the comments is that we made is that after the top five that Charlie mentioned in his place, kind of names started popping up all over the place. There's a lot of guys that I see that have fairly similar cases going either way. So one guy that I think I'm a little bit higher on, than most is Dwight Smith Jr. I know the knock on him has kind of been he doesn't really have a position. But I kind of like just his game in general and what he was able to do in Lansing this year, especially. And I know he's one guy that I had a little higher on my list, and I think some of the other guys did. So I think he's one guy that I'd look out for sure.
Well, I can tell you from seeing Dwight Smith Jr. play a few times this year that he is showing some really impressive, I think for me, I think he's got really strong wrists and he really can get around on balls and hit them to all parts of the field. And I do agree that the knock is that his bat right now doesn't profile as a corner outfielder, and he's not, he doesn't really have the range to play in center field. So the question of where is he going to play really becomes a factor. How about you, Charlie? What do you think about any surprises on the list or any guys that you were hoping that would end up after the final tally that didn't end up there?
I was a bit surprised that Anthony Alford dropped out. I mean, he barely dropped out, but I can understand why, you know, him only having 30 at-bats this year, you know, after 20, I believe it was the year before, that people just maybe are a bit tired of hyping his prospect status when there's a very real chance he doesn't actually end up being a baseball player. But, you know, being still the athlete that he is, I still think that he is potentially a prospect. It's just a matter of focusing that ability. I guess I was sort of expecting it, but I was also a bit surprised at the back end that, you know, some of the guys from the 2013 draft, some of the higher end risk reward picks that the Jays went with, like Jacob Brentson and Rowdy Tellez, they slid in, and I figured they would, but it still is a bit surprising given, you know, the seasons these guys had weren't particularly that great. But then, you know, in Tellez in particular, we started to hear some good stuff near the end of the year. And then from instructionals, we started to get some positive tweets. So, you know, it's always, that's what makes this list sort of fun, is that even with a very, very small sample size of pro at bats, you can still sort of dream big. And that's what, you know, makes it fun writing about them.
Well, I also think that the fact that we had a number of different writers for Jays Journal submit lists really gave a lot of different perspectives. And I know I've explained it. I know you put this into your sort of preview column, that in my case, I'm really the type of person. I want to see how these players do, especially at the higher levels of the minor leagues, before I really go all in on them. I'm actually working on my Blue Jays top 15 for Grading on the Curve, which is another of the fan-sided sites that I've started to co-edit. And one of the things that I've sort of been doing is I've got some of the players that people are a lot higher on, or some other people are a lot higher on, but they're still really young. I've sort of put them towards the bottom part of that top 15 because, you know, there are some holes in their game right now, and whether they can fill those holes is still a big question mark. Guys like DJ Davis and Franklin Barreto, you know, they're not, you know, as hyped as they're being, they are not finished products the way we get when we get some of the guys at the higher end of the list, like Sean Nolan, who is, you know, almost ready if you look at what he's been able to do at the higher levels of the minor leagues.
Yeah, Barreto made massive strides, you know, putting together the list. I think there was a couple of us that had him in the top five, actually. I'm not going to give it away, but I don't think he quite cracked the top five. But a few of us writers did have him in there, and I know there is whisperings going around. Kyle mentioned it in his email to us that, you know, Baseball Prospectus and some of the other more advanced prospectors are going to possibly have him slip into their top 100. So, you know, he definitely turned some heads this year, and, you know, with his past international experience, I think there's a bit more of a grounding for us to be a bit higher on him. Whereas, you know, I can understand your point of view as far as some of the other kids that have come out of high school, and, you know, like Matthew Smorrow, who, you know, has all the tools in the world, but isn't quite putting them in the toolbox just yet. However, you know, with his size and God-given ability, there is a lot to dream on there.
And Michael, what's your sort of philosophy when you're trying to rank these prospects?
I tend to go strongly positionally. If there's kind of guys that I see along the same lines, I will kind of highly more rate pitcher, shortstop, catcher, center fielder, kind of more down the middle of the diamond. So I know in some cases when I had to make a tough decision, I'd maybe pick a guy who was a shortstop over somebody who was a third baseman, maybe potentially getting moved to first base later on. So just because I like having at least somebody that can have the potential of playing multiple position. I see shortstops potentially, like, they can play short, if not third or second base, if they can hit, and they get moved off the position. So I give them more upside for that reason. I tend to side with youth a little bit more as well. So, I know that, if it's another kind of factor, it come down to a lot of decisions of who you're going to rate higher. And I know, I always like to see the younger guy with maybe, more potential upside to get better and a little bit maybe of a longer window, but I don't hold it. I get that they're too far away from the minors, so maybe I'll rate a few of the lower guys a little higher than some of the guys that are a little closer just based on their potential. So, yeah, just a couple things that I do. I know it's the first time I've done the list, and I found it was pretty tough. A lot of sliding back and forth. So, but that's generally my theory, is I'll go on kind of positionally and also kind of youth and tools and kind of that aspect. So.
So Michael, are you planning on doing an honorable mention column about one of the players that you had rated that didn't make the list?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you bring that up. I know that Kenny Wilson was a guy that didn't make the top 30, not to give too much away from the list here, but somebody that I kind of maybe underestimated earlier in my Arizona fall preview piece, and he's been in the minors for a long time, and he didn't hit for probably, I think his probably first 1,300 plate appearances weren't very productive, but I don't know if it was UJ and I was talking and about there's still some people in the J system that are still relatively have some hope on him. He was added to the 40 man, so maybe that shows that there's still some hope for him. So he's some guy that his game's a lot of speed and he strikes out a lot and there's still definitely some holes in his game, but he's probably a guy that I wouldn't give up on quite yet. So he's probably going to be my honorable mention from this year's list. So,
and how about you, Charlie? Who do you have your eye on for the honorable mention?
Well, I'm going to go with Alfred again, just because for whatever reason I've had this obsession with him over at Jay's Journal, posting numerous articles on him. But I'm also going to write about Shane Dawson, who, you know, I don't think a lot of people will have their eyes on, but, you know, based on the fact that I see him, or I did see him quite a bit here in Vancouver, you know, you get more of a feel when you see these kids live, and, you know, had the chance to speak to him a few times, you just get sort of a more feel for their competitiveness and their drive. And I think this kid, you know, just has it all on the mental side of the game. You know, physically, he may not throw as hard as you'd like, but I think, you know, you combine the two things, the two aspects of his game, he could go a lot further, you know, at least within the system. When you're looking at the bottom end of this list, you know, by no means are we thinking they're going to be possible regulars in the Jays lineup, but they could end up much higher in the system and eventually get there in time. So I look forward to writing those two pieces.
Well, I definitely had Shane Dawson on my list. I actually had him at 22 on my list, so it's great to see that he's going to get some love from Jay's Journal and get an honorable mention article. You know, I've already posted my article on Casey Hobson, so those of you who are readers of Jay's Journal, you already know what I think of him. He's actually one of the few guys I haven't seen, because I wasn't able to get down to Dunedin this year outside of spring training. And for me, I've sort of kept an eye on Hobson over the last couple of years, and you know, his power has really started to develop, and, you know, I went through the whole mathematical calculations to figure out what he would have hit if his BABIP hadn't been so incredibly low, this year. And it actually, his numbers were pretty eye-popping when you realize that so much of his season was, you know, I think he had a 215 batting average, but he also had like a 207 BABIP, so it was unbelievably low. So, you know, I was really impressed by not only his numbers, but, you know, speaking to Tyler Murray, the play-by-play voice of the Dunedin Blue Jays, he told me that, you know, he would hit the ball hard almost all the time. And the other guy that I think I'm going to write a honorable mention report on is Emilio Guerrero, a guy who I saw a couple of times in Lansing before he was promoted right at the end of the season to Dunedin. And Guerrero really came on. He had one phenomenal game that included six hits and a grand slam. He is a shortstop at the moment. He may move over to third base at some point. His fielding is probably the weakest part of his game. But he is also one of these guys that when I got to Lansing the first time, you know, the contacts with the media division of the Lugnuts, they basically said, you know, our two toolsiest guys are Carlos Ramirez and Emilio Guerrero. And that surprised me because Dalton Pompey is on that team and Dwight Smith Jr. was on that team. And guys like Christian Lopes, who made a lot of noise last year, but really didn't translate that into the full season ball. You know, he was one of those guys that they said, oh, you know, keep an eye on him. And he really turned it on in the last half of the season. So now that we're there, why don't we talk about some of the guys who really dropped this year, who really fell from the list. Charlie, since you are the keeper of the list, why don't you weigh in and let us know who you thought would have been much higher that ended up fairly low, relatively speaking?
I think, you know, it was a bit of a surprise. You and I discussed this prior to putting out the list as to whether Kevin Pillar, I mean, I graduated him. That goes against, I guess, what the ethos of the list. You know, he is still eligible for, or he still has rookie eligibility, so he should really still be considered a prospect and probably should have gotten a bit more love because, you know, he will be, I think, I'm not going to guess or predict that he's going to do a full season with the Jays next year, but I think within the next year or two, he will be, if not a regular, at least, you know, a member of the Jays. So I think he could have gotten a bit more love. I think Santiago Nesci, catcher last year for Lansing, was a big dropper. I can't remember exactly what we had him as last year, but it was right around 10-12, I believe. And he fell quite a bit. And, you know, I think it was part and parcel with, you know, I wrote a blurb on him for your Van Cees, where I'm going through my top 30 with them as well. And, you know, he did have some injury problems this year. He had, I believe, a concussion early in the season, May, and missed quite a few games, and then it affected him when he got back. But, you know, I'd spoken to a few scouts here and there in Vancouver, and a few of them, and I think I read online as well that, you know, some people are starting to see some holes in his swing that won't easily be rectified and, you know, could cause some problems. So I think there's a very real chance that Nessie repeats next year in Lansing, which, you know, isn't the worst thing in the world. He's not terribly old. You know, and they're going to have to sort of reshuffle the deck catching wise, but I think he still is, you know, the number two catching prospect in the system, which sort of just goes to show the paucity of catches in the system after all the recent trades. But, you know, I think he fell quite a bit further than I expected.
Right. And, you know, I still think there's some upside there. And the first time I was in Lansing this year, he had just gotten hurt. I got there just at the beginning of May, but I did see him catch and I did see him hit in a game in August. And to me, he was behind. It just looked like he was taking things the other way all the time. His bat looked slow. And I think, you know, he's only 20 years old, so by no means should anybody be writing him off. It feels like he's been around forever, but that's because he's an international free agent who signed very young. So he's still very young, and I think by no means should we write him off, but there were definitely some signs that might tarnish the shine on him a little bit. Is there anyone for you, Michael, that you thought was surprising at how low they dropped?
I'm just looking at the list right now just to kind of get an idea. I Dwight Smith Jr. a little higher on my list here. Let me just see.
Just while you're looking, Michael, I can confirm that Nessier was 11 last year we had him at. So
he
did drop a fair ways, and you know, he was sort of a, you know, meant to be a power bat, and like you said, Jay, you know, when you saw him, he was going the other way and not hitting for the power that people had come to expect from him. So I think that's the reason he dropped, and you know, hopefully he has a great season next year, and we can push him back up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess one drop that I can talk about that I'm not really surprised by it, but I know that John Stilson kind of saw a tumble. I think last year we had him, I'm looking at it, I think 15. So we weren't as high on him last year as maybe some of the other lists that had him. But basically, he didn't drop a whole lot in our regard, but I know that for myself in general, just the fact that he's pretty much his ceilings as a reliever, which isn't the worst opinion in a lot of people's eyes, but maybe when he was drafted, there was a hope that he could still be a starter. So, the fact that he's kind of, and then he's also got kind of the funky delivery that hopefully I don't want to get to any suggestions, but he did leave the Arizona Fall League midway through. So he hasn't, so there's maybe concern something could be going on there, but just in general, he just hasn't really panned out to what he could have been, and we kind of knew the injury risk was there when we drafted him, but I'm just personally a little disappointed, and I think a lot of us held him back on the list because of that lack of a kind of a starter ability and destiny as a reliever. So that's one guy that comes to mind. I don't know, Christian Lopes I maybe had a little higher on my list, but other than that, I think that it's pretty fair, and I don't think that there was too many tumblers. Obviously, like, I think Alfred, we had 10 last year, so that's obviously a huge drop but that's more to do with a lack of actually playing baseball than ability. So, but yeah, other than that, I don't know. It's nothing, two big surprises, I guess. I'm looking at it here, but we might have a few surprises included as well, so you guys have to wait and find out. So,
right, and a lot of the Stilson drop, I think, comes from the fact that he's, you know, it's been sort of decided that he's no longer a starter, and he, you know, it's that positional shift. And I think there are several guys who are on this list who are going to be impacted by that positional shift at some point. And in particular, I think the word on the street about Franklin Barreto is that he's not a shortstop. One writer for Baseball Prospectus that I met in spring training last year, Chris King, you know, he came on the podcast towards the end of the season, and he told me that while they had seen some improvement in Barreto's defense, they really, you know, it was pretty bad to begin with, and there's a very, very good chance that he's not going to end up as a shortstop. The same thing is being said about the sort of the next shortstop up in that cluster of three Dominican or three Barreto's Venezuelan, but they've got these three Latin American shortstops that are very young and at the bottom levels of the system last year with Barreto and Doel Lugo and Richard Urena. And Lugo, who's the sort of furthest along of the three, they're saying, again, he's probably going to end up moving to third base at a certain point. He's okay at shortstop. And I did see him play shortstop, and he's okay there, but he wasn't anything spectacular, where they're saying that Urena is really the best defensive player of that three. So we very well, in the next couple of years, may see Barreto and Lugo sort of drop as their positional value goes down the defensive spectrum.
From what I heard and talked, I spoke to one of the GCL hitting coaches, came up to work with us. He's near the end of the year, so I had some good chats with him. And, you know, he said of those three, Barreto is the furthest ahead by quite a margin, actually. His physical tools and abilities and, you know, just the experience he had, as I said earlier, playing, you know, international baseball from a young age. He's just more mentally focused than the other two. And I mean, I've said this before. I can't see it happening, but he predicted that Barreto would skip Vancouver and go straight to Lansing next year. Which, you know, for he'll be 18 in February is pretty heady stuff. So, I mean, I think that's why he's getting bandied about as a possible top 100 this year. Lugo, same thing. I saw him. I thought he was all right. I'm not a scout, you know, so, you know, whether his footwork was perfect, he seemed to have very, very good arm strength, and for the most part it was accurate. Where he got into a bit of trouble for me was on the most routine plays. I think he just lost his concentration a bit, but he made some tough plays. You know, for us to even be having this argument about three potential very good shortstops in the system is probably the best argument we could be having. You know, these kids are all meant to be very good. Lugo has light tower power, quite literally. He knocked out the C in Canadians over the left center field fence near the end of the season last year, which was an absolute monster shot.
Yeah, well, I, you know, just touching on him, I also saw him hit a triple off the top of the fence in right center field, and he's a right-handed hitter. So he definitely has incredible raw power.
But how it translates is another thing, yeah. This was during a game, and talking to Dave Pano, the hitting coach here, Lugo was in his group in extended, and he said, you know, during BP, he hit some absolute monster shots off him. So, fun stuff to talk about, no doubt, but, you know, hopefully these kids, I think Barreto's bat's gonna play anywhere. Whether he sticks it short or not, Lugo is probably the same, whereas Urena may not have the same bat as the other two, but could, you know, could be the defensive whiz of the three of them. So really, it's really exciting, actually.
And so Michael, what do you think about sort of the positional, what other positions of strength do you think the Blue Jays have in their system as opposed to just shortstop?
It's not bad when it comes to pitching depth. Like there's a few guys with definitely some upside. Like I know, like Chase DeJong and, Alberto Tirado. They're two guys that are still pretty high on a lot of people's lists that are, I know, they were both highly regarded by, Baseball America and their lists and whatnot. So, and then it'd be nice. The one thing is that we gave up a lot of pitching, I guess, depth at the top end that's close, but, those two guys, especially, they're kind of two guys that I debated who would I rank higher. So I'm pretty high on both of those guys. Tom Robson's, coming down as well. Obviously, wish there's a little bit more there. And then obviously at the top, like, there's still Osuna and Nolan and obviously Stroman and Sanchez. So it's, I don't mind the pitching depth. It's definitely, it's probably the next area I would look at as far as strength goes. I'd probably go with pitching after shortstop. But like I said, I love the outfield, and like Charlie said, I think Barreto, he'll play anywhere. He's just got the type of bat, and just he's a baseball player. So whether you put him infield, learns how to play outfield, whatever, he'll play in the major league. So I'm real high on him. So it's not. I know we always try to stress that there's a lot of depth, and it's not maybe as barren of a system as some people may believe, and it's not a too many guys that are awful close, but there's a few guys that could be could have some pretty high ceilings. So
Michael, tell me who's your guy on the top 30 list? Like, you must have had one guy that you probably ranked a lot higher than he probably ended up, and you may think more of him than other guys do, or you just think that he's the bee's knees. And let's stay out of the top five for now, because I think, you know, people pretty much know how that's going to shake down for the most part. But let's, you know, stay out of the top five. Who's your guy? Who's your boy, Blue?
I honestly, I really like Lugo. I know I had him actually probably higher than anybody else on the list. I didn't see what everybody's lists were, but I know I had him awful high. I know I want to say Dwight Smith Jr., but I feel like I've already talked about him enough. But Lugo, I do like, I'm not sure if it's just like Charlie said, when he gets in a streak or whatnot, but I think that he's a guy that could break through and could be a good major league player. So he's, I don't know if I want to call him my guy. I know that my guy is probably getting into the, I'll just say it, but my guy's Stroman. I can't wait to buy a Marcus Stroman jersey. So, that being said, probably either that, Dwight Smith Jr. is pretty high, but I know Lugo is a guy that's maybe never been quite as high, and I don't know if you're maybe expecting him to drop off a bit, but he's still a guy that I'm still fairly high on, and probably higher than most people, I'd say, is Dal Lugo. So,
all right, how about you, Charlie?
I've got two. I think, well, you had him quite high as well, Jay. I'm just looking. I've got all five of our lists here. But I think both you and I had Tom Robson quite a bit higher than everybody else.
You know what I think it is, though? I think it's because we've both seen him pitch.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the reason. You know, having seen him pitch and just his focus on the, well, not, I mean, we can talk about his stuff. I mean, I think his stuff is a lot better than anybody thinks. You know, with the sink he gets on the fastball and the power sort of run he gets into right-handers, you know, the amount of ground balls he generates with that pitch, you can look past his strikeout numbers or his K per nine, you know, ratio and just see that, you know, he's making these guys at lower levels look bad. And then you mix in his changeup, which also has good tilts and good run. And if you can just start commanding his curveball, which is an unbelievable hook. You know, I sat behind home plate and charted him quite a bit this year. And, you know, it does have 12-9 spin. It's just a matter of him being able to throw it over when he needs it and then bury it in the dirt, you know, when he's ahead in the count. But just his competitiveness on the mound is off the charts. I mean, it wasn't when he gave up base hits, so obviously he would get PO'd then, but if he missed a spot, he was mad at himself. He was just fierce out there. And I think, you know, you have to take that into account sometimes. I was speaking to the C's pitching coach, Jim Tchaikovsky, and he said someone had asked him, this was prior to the J.A. Happ trade to Houston, you know, Kevin Comer and Tom Robson apparently on, you know, in the side sessions looked exactly the same. Very similar delivery, very similar, you know, sort of pitch repertoire. And he said, you know, who would you trade if someone came calling for one of these two? And he said, you know, Kevin Comer every day and twice on Sunday, just because he had that sort of more laid back attitude, whereas Robson was an absolute bulldog on the mound. So, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into it because I've seen him, and you know, Lord knows I fell in love with Taylor Cole and Javier Abandono the year before, and they both got exposed a bit in Lansing, so I could be saying the exact same thing next year. But I think him and Shane Dawson are gonna be successful. I mean, Dawson will depend a bit on the elbow injury he suffered late in the year. But I really think Robertson's gonna have a big year in Lansing and start to, you know, show some prospect people. Like, I spoke to Mark Hewlett over Twitter, who looks at the Jays quite a bit, and, you know, his comment was that he's moved a bit faster in the system based on his ability to control his fastball, but still shows sort of back-end starter's talent at best, which, you know, is great. You know, we've praised Sean Nolan for looking like he's going to be a durable back-end of the rotation sort of guy, but that's not the sort of tag you want to put on somebody in rookie ball. But I tend to think he can be better than that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does in Lansing.
Well, just let me interject something about Robson. You know, I've got my notes out here from when I saw him in Bluefield. And, you know, he was throwing 89, 90, and that's where he was really sitting. He hit 92 on occasion. And I got to tell you, when you're throwing a sinker, that's pretty close to major league average velocity. You know, the sinkers usually come in about 2 miles an hour faster than the four, slower than the four seamers. And, you know, it was one of these things where his velocity actually surprised me, where it was actually faster than I thought it would be. And, when you're throwing the sinker at that velocity, and again, his frame says that there might be a little bit more there too. And, cause he's not a big guy, he's fairly lanky, and he's still only 20 years old. And so, you know, he's already got velocity that is nearing major league average. And when he's got the control and he's got that heavy sink to it, as well as the off-speed pitches that are still works in progress, I think seeing him as a back-end starter, even at this point, is not out of the realm of possibility.
No, like you said, I mean, he's 6'4" and he's only 200 pounds. So he's a big kid already, but he can definitely fill out a bit more. And, you know, he was sitting in Vancouver at 92, 93 with the ability to get it up to 95 occasionally. So, you know, that's not bad velocity at all. And with the heavy sink and, you know, a bit with the two seamer would also have some arm side run as well. It was a very effective pitch. And, you know, I think he's still got a little bit to learn about pitching. You know, he would live on the outside part of the plate a lot. And I know the pitching coaches in Vancouver were trying to get him to come inside, a bit more just to mess with the hitters' heads and get themselves some even cheaper ground ball outs. So I think that's probably something they had him working on in instructs and we'll carry forward into spring training next year.
Okay. And who's your second guy?
My second guy was, you know, getting out of the top five, we could talk about Daniel Norris. I think I had him a lot higher than anybody else. But for me, I still give Dalton Pompey probably maybe a bit more sort of credit than other guys do. He flashes so many plus tools. And I just think if he could put it all together, he could go from the realm of sort of fringy, you know, defense first speed guy prospect to all around prospect. You know, he showed flashes last year. And again, Jay, I know you saw him quite a bit and came away impressed. I just think, you know, if he ups his contact rates a bit more, he's going to get his chance in Dunedin, which is a fairly aggressive assignment. He was drafted quite young. So he still is fairly young for the levels he's going to. And I think if he impresses in Dunedin, then we could have something on our hands here. Whereas, you know, I know Dunedin's where Canadian prospects like Krause and Marcus Knecht went to die, but let's hope it doesn't happen for Dalton.
Yeah, I am fairly high on Dalton. I think I probably had him ranked highest of anybody in the lists. I see a lot of really great stuff in him. He's very focused. He spent a lot of the year, or a nice chunk of the year, with a broken toe. And I think that really hurt his explosiveness out of the batter's box. He definitely needs to work on cutting down the strikeouts. A guy like him even though he does have power, a guy like him, I think, needs to just make contact more, because, you know, by cutting down strikeouts and putting the ball in play more, he's going to give himself a lot more of a chance to get on base and use his speed. The other thing I love about him is how efficient a base stealer he is. I think I saw one game where he was still hobbling a little bit because of his broken toe, and he was caught stealing in that game, but, you know, his caught stealing rate, I think he was stealing about, at one point he was stealing well over 90% of the bases he tried to steal, and I think his final percentage was in the low to mid 80s, which is still very, very good. And so for a guy who's 20, 21 years old, and again, he's from Mississauga, so he's not going to get the same amount of playing time and development time that Canadian kids out of BC will get. So, you know, for a guy like him to have shown what he can do and have a very, very solid season with a good on-base percentage, excellent base stealing, outstanding defense, he won a gold glove for the minor leagues, and there were only one player at every position picked, not for every, you know, not for every league, not for every division. Only one player at every position over the entire minor leagues was selected, and Pompey won a gold glove for center field in that competition. So I think, you know, what we're really seeing is a guy who could be a really solid all-around major leaguer if he develops the way we would like him to.
Yeah, if I could make just two very quick points on what you just said there, I think you're right, you know, for him coming from Mississauga, and that's why also I'm quite high on Shane Dawson. I think I did a quick study, and he is the northernmost, you know, minor leaguer out there right now, coming from Drayton Valley, Alberta. So it's the same for him. Like, his base of work would have been quite a bit smaller than anybody else's, just for how short their seasons would have been growing up. And then into college, he went to Lethbridge Community College. And in regards to Dalton, you know, that's why I was quite surprised, actually, that they protected Kenny Wilson by putting him on the 40, because, you know, for his tools that he brings to the table, you know, the Jays already have Ghost, you know, either in AAA or sniffing around the majors, and then you've got guys like Pompey and DJ Davis and even Dwight Smith Jr. that are sort of moving up the ladder behind him that all sort of bring the same sort of abilities to the game. And, you know, I think Pompey and especially DJ Davis, if he can bring it all together, you know, will surpass Kenny Wilson quite quickly. So I was quite surprised when they protected him.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, they want to keep the guys in the system, and they really, I think if Kenny Wilson's slated to play in AAA next year, it could be a signal that the Blue Jays are ready to keep Ghost in the major leagues, regardless of whether he's going to get everyday playing time or not. And, or they don't necessarily have as much faith about Cabrera's ability to stay healthy, perhaps. So I have a feeling that that Ghost is going to be up in the bigs, and at least as a fourth outfielder, and a guy like Kenny Wilson is going to be able to play every day in AAA, and they really don't have a lot of those guys who can play center field really well at the top levels of their minor leagues.
Right. Yeah, that's a possibility for sure.
All right. So I'm going to give you my guy. And my guy is a guy that I talked to Kyle Matt, who's one of our other prospect guys at Jays Journal, and he really likes him too, and that's Chase DeYoung. And, you know, I actually made him my pitcher of the year for the Bluefield Blue Jays, because to me he's got the most developed and the most mature package, of all those guys down there. He has the best control, other than Robson, but he's also got that just outstanding 12-6 curveball that is devastating. And I also really liked what I saw with his changeup. When he threw it, when he took a little bit more off it, he was still trying to find that right spot where he could get some nice fade to it. But when he did throw it a little bit slower, he actually got much better movement, and it was very, very good. I mean, he's throwing 90 to 91. He's also 6'4" and 185 pounds. He's only 19. Maybe he's turned 20 already. So he's a tall kid who hasn't filled out yet, throwing in the low 90s, with very, very good fastball command. And, he's definitely one of the guys that I think is really has the potential to open a lot of eyes this year. I think he's going to be in Lansing, and Lansing's going to have what if all the assignments go the way I think they will, Lansing's going to be in a piggybacking mode again this year, and they're going to have guys like DeYoung, Tirado, Laborde, Jeremy Gavareski, Tom Robson, maybe Shane Dawson. So they're going to have this big cluster of guys who have really done well up to this point, fighting it out for innings over there. So he's really my guy. I think I may have had him. I think Kyle had him a little bit higher on the list than I did, but still inside the top 10. I think we're both really high on him. The other guy that I really like is a guy that I saw make, I think, his last start in Lansing before he got promoted to Dunedin, and that is Matt Boyd, who is not on the list at all, and I had him in my top 20. So I may actually do an honorable mention for Boyd. You know, I saw him at the end of a year that he pitched a lot of innings in college ball, because he was the sixth round pick of the Jays this past year. You know, he went deep into the College World Series, he pitched a ton of innings, threw a ton of pitches, and then he went out and threw about 35-40 innings in professional baseball. And, you know, he's a lefty who doesn't dominate. I've heard that he can get it up to about 94. I saw him sitting around 88-89, which tells me that I think he might have been a little bit fatigued at that point. And he has a really good changeup. He has a really good curveball that I really like when he throws it a bit harder. It's a bit sharper. And as a lefty, he had excellent control. And when he was getting the ball down, especially with his changeup, he was practically unhittable in the game that I saw. So he's a guy that will probably start in Dunedin and is likely to finish the season if things go well and if he pitches the way I think he can. You know, he's going to end up the season in double A and could be one of these guys who becomes like Deck McGuire, who has a great, you know, second pro season and then sort of hits a wall. But I also think that there's definitely some upside there.
Yeah, I mean, everything I read about him was that he was a genuine sixth rounder rather than, you know, we've come to know the Jays and Anthopoulos to sort of go from rounds 4 or 5 through 10. Of picking college seniors that have no leverage and are signed quite cheaply. But, you know, he signed, I think it was 75K. And, you know, like you said, he threw a ton of innings in college. I think they even gave him a break after the World Series before he had to report. So for me, I mean, I did hum and haw about him a bit, but just the sample size wasn't there for me to make, you know, to put him onto my list. But he's definitely someone more, I wrote, I think, a couple of pieces for Jordan Van Cees, hoping that he would come to Vancouver, because I really wanted to see him. But, you know, they thought high enough of him that they skipped Vancouver entirely and went to Lansing.
Yeah, and I think he was similar to Marcus Stroman was last year, where Stroman last year was sort of the most polished guy that they picked in the draft, and I think Boyd was that in this year's draft. He was definitely the most polished pitcher. So we are going to wrap things up. It's we're getting on here over 45 minutes, so I'm hoping the listeners have enjoyed listening to us talk about Blue Jays prospects. So I'm going to ask Michael, what do you think the readers at Jays Journal can have to look forward to? Any final comments?
It was a lot of fun to put together, and I know that I'm not sure how many years we've been doing this list, but it was just pretty much great to be a part of. And I know that especially there's a lot of depth, and so once you get kind of within the top 15, it really heats up. So it's going to be good, and we'll love to hear anybody who's listening who wants to chime in on what they think on any of them. We'd love to hear what you guys think as well, and mostly there's a lot of depth that we're looking forward to getting through, and it should be good. So.
And Charlie, what about you? Any sort of final thoughts? What have you learned putting all these lists together and compiling them?
Yeah, same thing. I got a lot more excited about the system. I mean, last year was a tough year after the trades. You know, that sort of took out quite a few of our top 10 players and sort of messed with, you know, our list a little bit. And then, you know, all in all, I think throughout the season, it was a grind last year. Some of the guys that we had high had very difficult seasons, but so I was a bit down when I made this list, but definitely putting it together has helped me keep my chin up a bit, so to speak, because there is quite a bit of depth in the Jays system, especially as Mike mentioned on the pitching side. And as you mentioned, Jay, next year Lansing will definitely be the team to watch. Well, Bluefield will be fun as well, but from April, Lansing's going to be the team to watch because they're going to have a ton of kids up there, as you said, vying for innings, and, you know, hopefully, you know, they're successful, and it'll be interesting to see what they do halfway through when they all want to get stretched out a bit, how they're going to manage that situation.
Yeah, and I also think that Lansing is, the position players are going to be terrific. I mean, you're going to have guys like Mitch Ney, who we haven't talked about, but Mitch Ney, who was, you know, spent the whole season in Bluefield and then came up for the playoffs to Vancouver, and he was named the Northwest League playoff MVP.
Yeah, he's another guy we should have mentioned. And talking to Clayton McCullough too, if I can interject quickly, is, you know, he said, listen, these college kids that we're seeing after the 2013 draft, guys like Mike Reeves and LB Dantzler, who were probably in and around the top 30 in the lower levels, this isn't the time to be watching them because they're tired. So, you know, let them have a full winter off and a full spring training with us, and then let's see what they can do in 2014. So that also excites me, you know, some of those guys.
Right, and again, I think some of these guys who are going to be filtering up, Lansing's going to have a great team with Ney and Dean and probably Lugo and DJ Davis in the outfield, and then, you know, filtering up some of the guys who are in Vancouver, I can really see in Dunedin next year. Like, I can see LB Dantzler moving up to Dunedin. I can see Mike Reeves moving up to Dunedin. So I have a feeling that some of those guys are going to be filtering up a little faster than some people might have thought.
Agreed, yeah. I think Reeves for sure. I don't know. I mean, Dantzler, first base is going to be a bit jam-packed in the Lansing-Dunedin sort of range. So I'll be interested to see what they do with some of those guys like Patterson and Jordan Leland and Dantzler and Matt Dean, of course. So, yeah, it's going to be fun stuff, and I wish I was like you and planning a potential spring training trip right now.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's not great for the bank account, but it's, it's definitely good fun. And, it was definitely one of the highlights of my years last year was getting down to spring training and spending some time at the minor league complex. So, and I heartily recommend to any of our listeners out there who have the wherewithal and the time to be able to do it. You know what? Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. You're not missing much, ladies and gentlemen. Check out the minor league facility. Camp yourself out there. There's always stuff going on, even if it's pitching, fielding practice. I recommend heading down sort of after the midway point. So once you get into about 3 weeks left, the minor league teams start playing games, and you'll have games at that minor league complex every day. Two of the teams will go somewhere else and play. Two of the teams stay home. And it's a really great experience to just see these young guys, and you can chat with them a little bit once they're done their work. You know, just watching the young kids and seeing them stand around, seeing them, you know, get to know their teammates. It's a lot of fun. Also Lansing is only, you know, 5 hours drive away. So if you have the time, get out there for a weekend. Next year's team's going to be really exciting. And Buffalo's just a couple hours away from Toronto, the Buffalo fans, the Buffalo baseball experience is definitely an interesting one. I saw several games down there last year. So if you're in the Toronto area, there's definitely some baseball outside of the Sky Dome that you can see within, you know, just a few hours' drive. And maybe we'll have a Jays Journal road trip next summer. What do you think, Michael?
we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll all go down to New Hampshire and we'll stay at Kyle Franzoni's place.
Yeah, exactly. We'll crash. I'm sure his wife would love that.
Oh, I'm sure she would.
We should do it though, for real. Well, at least Lansing sounds like it'd be doable, so.
All right, well, so we're gonna wrap that up. That's Michael Ray, co-editor of Jays Journal, and Charlie Caskey, a staff writer over at Jays Journal, and he also writes for UR Van Cees and the Vancouver Sun. So we're gonna call it there. This is the Blue Jays From Away podcast. Have a great day, everybody, and go Jays, go.